Hello and welcome to the Thursday, August 20th edition of the Salem News. I'm Ken, your volunteer reader here at the Talking Information Center. Salem Inn to restore historic building. Salem. The proprietors of the Salem Inn recently shared their plans for the renovation of the more than 250-year-old property on Summer Street and expansion of their campus. Since 1983, Dick and Diane Pabish have operated the Salem Inn, a bed and breakfast with more than 40 rooms across three restored historical homes in downtown Salem. After acquiring the 1834 home of Captain Nathaniel West at 7 Summer Street, the Pabishes would later acquire the Peabody House at 15 Summer Street, built in 1868, and the Kerwin House at 331 Essex Street, built in 1854. Now, following the recent acquisition of 11 Essex Street, located between the West House and Peabody House, the Pabishes are planning to add the historic home to their campus. Through the proposed renovation of the main structure and the conversion of the carriage house into a townhouse unit. The main building's 6 apartment units would be converted to a 15-unit hotel with an interior elevator, an accessible hotel unit, and an exterior accessible ramp. Project improvements to the property would include parking with solar panel carports, walking paths, site drainage, a geothermal system, landscaping, and a garden seating area. The geothermal heating and cooling system, in combination with the new solar panels, would allow for the three buildings on Summer Street to be natural gas free. We are trying very hard to be stewards of the environment, both physically with the buildings as well as the grounds around them, Dick Pabish said during a presentation at the Salem Redevelopment Authority's August 12th meeting. The Salem Redevelopment Authority approved the demolition of a single-story six-car garage located at the back southeast corner of the property during that meeting. The main building at 11 Summer Street, built by William Sycon in 1762 and sold to John Derby in 1778, was originally a two-story single-family building. In the 1920s, following the Great Salem Fire, the owners at the time added stucco to the entire building, bay windows, and a second entrance to convert the single family into a 6-unit apartment building. The vinyl siding that is seen on the property today was added in the 70s. In the process of acquiring the building, Pabish requested that Historic Salem Incorporated research its history. David Mofford of Historic Salem Incorporated said that the property is, without hyperbole, one of the most important houses in the history of Salem and has been unheralded since the 19th century because it was broken apart into apartments and covered with a concrete facade in the 1930s and 1940s. The property was owned by a variety of prominent figures, including the wealthy merchant lineages such as the Crowans and the Lindahls, as well as David Cheever, a distiller, deacon in the First Church of Charlestown, and a representative to the Provincial Congress. Ephraim Emerton, whose granddaughter, Caroline Emerton, would found the House of the Seven Gables, also owned the home and passed it down to family members from 1831 to 1889. In the 1700s, we found out that John and Abigail Adams visited this house, Pabish said. We were so enthralled with that fact that we are going to call the house the Abigail Adams House when we're finished, to bring that historic aspect to it. The house has immense historic character, and we're going to try to restore it to the way it was in 1885 and have an integrated campus. The proposed restoration was approved unanimously by the Salem Redevelopment Authority, but still requires approval from the Design Review and Planning Boards. Tom Daniel, the city's Director of Planning and Community Development, commended the Pabish's efforts to restore the historic property and simultaneously eliminate the need for natural gas. Sometimes, with these small things that go through these processes, People don't realize how extraordinary it is what's going on, Daniel said. It's a really important example to highlight how we can reduce our dependence on fossil fuels and that there are ways to do it, even with historic properties. The full house history of the 11 Summer Street property prepared by Historic Salem Incorporated can be viewed at the hsihousehistory.omek.net. GOP hopefuls vying for shot at Healey, Boston. Republicans Mike Minows and Brian Shortsleeve will face off in the upcoming GOP primary for a chance to challenge incumbent Democratic Governor Maura Healey in the general election. Minows, the former CEO of a biomedical device company and a top Republican donor, cinched the state Republican Party's endorsement with a landslide win at the GOP's convention in April, picking up 70% of the votes from about 1,800 party delegates. He argues that Massachusetts is falling behind economically because of regulations, high taxes, and Democratic policies that have hurt the middle class and businesses. Massachusetts isn't working for everyone, Minows said in a 30-second campaign ad. The political elite are doing fine, but families struggle to pay their energy bills, health care, child care, and their jobs are leaving. On the campaign trail, the former combat veteran has focused largely on Healey's tenure in the governor's office and argues that the one-party system in Massachusetts is overspending, overtaxing, overregulating, and forcing businesses elsewhere as rising costs squeeze household budgets. Minows has vowed, if elected governor, to repeal the MBTA Communities Act, which requires cities and towns on the transit system to provide more zoning for multifamily housing, roll back the state's sanctuary protections that limit cooperation with federal immigration agents, and overhaul clean energy policies that he says are driving up energy costs. Shortsleeve, a venture capitalist and former MBTA official, launched his campaign last year, pledging to bring common sense conservative leadership to Beacon Hill and prioritize cutting wasteful government spending and taxes to help make Massachusetts more affordable. Everything is more expensive with Maura Healey in the corner office, he said in a recent campaign statement. We've spent hundreds of millions on emergency housing for migrants while homeless veterans sleep on the streets, and we're dead last in job growth nationwide. That's not leadership, it's failure. On the campaign trail, Shortsleeve has criticized Minows as a political newcomer, arguing that his experience on Beacon Hill gives him a better chance of defeating Healey. In a recent op-ed, Shortsleeve pointed out that Massachusetts has one of the highest SNAP payment error rates in the country, with taxpayers possibly on the hook for $300 million a year in penalties from the federal government, and pointed to his efforts to root out fraud during the Baker administration. When Governor Baker called me to turn around a government in crisis, I audited everything, cut the waste, and put fraudsters in jail, he said. As governor, I will bring that same approach to every agency on Beacon Hill. At the party's convention, Shortsleeve picked up 16% of the vote from delegates, placing second and earning him a spot on the primary ballot. He had previously qualified for the ballot by submitting the required number of signatures. A University of Massachusetts poll released this week showed Minows leading Shortsleeve 53% to 36% among likely GOP voters, with about 18% of those surveyed still undecided. The winner of the GOP gubernatorial primary will face Healey, a first-term Democrat, in the November 3rd election. Healey, who is seeking another four-year term, isn't facing a primary challenger. A former prosecutor and state attorney general, she made history in 2022 as she became Massachusetts' first woman and openly lesbian governor and returned the office to Democratic hands for the first time in a decade. Healey launched her re-election bid in January with a video and a new campaign website that touted her accomplishments over the past 3 years and laid out her plans for a second term. In the lieutenant governor's race, Short Sleeve's running mate, New Bedford City Councilor Sean Oliver, is the only candidate on the Republican ticket. That's because several other GOP hopefuls running for the second-in-command post were knocked off the primary ballot after failing to submit the required number of signatures to qualify. The GOP candidates, including Peabody at-large Councilwoman Ann Manning Martin, said they were duped by a hired signature gatherer who turned in fraudulent petitions. Manning Martin is running as a write-in candidate. Oliver will face incumbent Democratic Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll in the November elections. Like Healy, Driscoll faces no opposition on the Democratic primary ballot. Even though candidates for governor and lieutenant governor run separately in party primaries, winners are matched on the general election ballot. Overall, Republicans face long odds winning control of Beacon Hill, with Democrats holding the governor's office, attorney general, and other constitutional offices, and a supermajority in the State House of Representatives and Senate. Registered Democrats outnumber Republicans by a 3-to-1 margin. Recent polls have shown Healy with a double-digit advantage over her Republican challengers, with many voters not familiar with the challengers. Despite that, the state's voters have a tradition of sending GOP candidates to the governor's office, with five of the state's last six chief executives being Republicans. The Democratic Party has criticized both of GOP challengers, seeking to align them with Republican President Donald Trump, who remains unpopular in the deep blue state. Former Salem woman sentenced in Harvard body part ring. A woman who was living in Salem and ran her business in Peabody when she sold human body parts stolen from the Harvard Medical School morgue will serve 2 years in a Connecticut prison for her role in the scheme. Katrina McLean, 47, now of Haverhill, was sentenced Tuesday to 24 months in prison by a federal judge in Pennsylvania for transporting stolen goods across state lines, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Middle District of Pennsylvania said in a statement. McLean pleaded guilty to the crime late last year, 2 years after she had been arrested for her part in a nationwide stolen body part ring run by Cedric Lodge, an ex-manager of a Harvard Medical School morgue. Her sentencing comes the same week that Harvard agreed to a $53 million settlement in a class-action lawsuit brought by the family members of those who donated their bodies to the medical school's anatomical gifts program. While managing the morgue for that program between 2018 and 2022, Lodge stole numerous body parts to sell around the country. The Goffstown, New Hampshire resident and his wife, Denise Lodge, then sold these remains to McLean and others. The couple was indicted in 2023. Late last year, Cedric Lodge was sentenced to 96 months in prison, while his wife received 12 months and a day. Five others have also been sentenced in the ring. McLean was the owner of the Peabody-based Cat's Creepy Creations and curator of Freaks, Antiques, Uniques. She was allowed into Harvard morgue by Cedric Lodge to examine cadavers and bought body parts from the manager that she then resold for a profit of $8,800 to a Pennsylvania man, prosecutors said. The parts included two dissected faces McLean purchased for $600 in 2020 and human skin that members of the ring intended to turn into leather, according to her 2023 indictment. McLean argued in court early last year that human remains are not considered property under the law, as they have no compensable value, meaning the case did not meet the $5,000 jurisdictional amount requirement for the charges she faced. A judge later denied McLean's request for dismissal, declaring she treated the remains as property by buying and selling them. McLean initially faced a maximum sentence of 10 years and or a $250,000 fine. Salem resident finds container of collective playing cards. Salem. Recently, a Salem resident was out for a walk within the city when he found a container of collective playing cards which have an estimated value of between $3,000 to $5,000. The resident wishes to remain anonymous, but offered that, "I want to see it restored to its rightful owner. If you are missing this collection, you are asked to reach out to this reporter at jpote@northofboston.com, and after a couple of specific questions, you will then be put in touch with the Salem resident." So if you found them, you can call that guy. Pangalo joins national campaign to support entrepreneurial activity. Salem. Mayor Dominic Pangalo recently joined America the Entrepreneurial, a national campaign of local leaders aiming to support public engagement and policy changes to advance entrepreneurial activity. Pangalo has joined the organization as one of two founding mayors from Massachusetts, with the initiative aiming to renew America's entrepreneurial spirit in the 250th anniversary year of the United States. America the Entrepreneurial is an initiative of Right to Start, the national nonprofit organization advancing entrepreneurship as a civic priority, and More Perfect, a nonpartisan coalition of presidential centers, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, and over 100 organizations to renew American democracy by expanding civic education, increasing opportunities for public service, promoting representative governance, and supporting strong, reliable public media and information. Pangalo is now among 25 local leaders who will work to support efforts to support entrepreneurial activity in their communities. A list of involved local leaders is available at americatheentrepreneurial.org. The campaign will expand to engage individuals, organizations, and government leaders in their jurisdictions nationwide in the months ahead, according to the city. The campaign recently released three playbooks with possible actions that are designed to engage and activate those three separate audiences: individuals, organizations, and government leaders and their jurisdictions in support of entrepreneurship. Pangalo said that America the Entrepreneur is an opportunity for the city to recommit to the spirit of possibility that drives local businesses, fuels job creations, and strengthens the community. Salem has always been a city of innovators, creators, and entrepreneurs who have helped shape our community and economy, remarked Mayor Pangalo. I'm proud to join this effort as a founding mayor and to support policies and initiatives that make it easier for entrepreneurs and small business owners to start, grow, and succeed here in Salem and across the country. According to the city, reviving the spirit of entrepreneurship is crucial as new and young businesses create virtually all net job growth in the country, according to a 2010 report from the National Bureau of Economic Research. Additionally, according to a 2012 policy report from the Goldwater Institute, every 1% increase in entrepreneurial activity in a state correlates with a 2% decline in poverty. Kim Lane, Executive Director of America the Entrepreneurial and Chief Operating Officer of Right to Start, said that making it easier to found and grow startups and small businesses is crucial to the American economy. The beauty of entrepreneurship is that it benefits everyone, and every community can gain from having more new businesses and more economic vitality, Lane said. And in an article from the opinion page, "Scatter My Ashes in the Slow Lane," by Doug Brendel. Yeah, sure, all 50 states allow right on red. It takes a no-turn-on-red sign to restrain the practice. But based on personal experience, I surmise that Massachusetts doesn't do right-on-red the same as everyone else. In other states, it's right-turn-on-red after stop. Not here. Not in my neighborhood, anyway. I live in Ipswich, but in the nether regions. So far west, the map says, Here Be Dragons, Outer Linebrook Road, beyond Route 1. Many townies don't even realize it's still Ipswich out here. They think past Crumbies you're in Boxford. Wrong. We're still technically Ipswich, zip 01938. Our mail is delivered daily. On horseback, but still. Yes, there are disadvantages to frontier life. To get to the polls on election day, we have to pack a lunch. Revelers from Topsfield sometimes stagger across the line and frighten our songbirds. But mostly, life's good here. The biggest problem is crossing Route 1 to return to civilization. It's dangerous. Because Massachusetts, at least unofficially, is so laissez-faire about right turn on red. I was cruising eastbound on Outer Linebrook in my Hyundai, doing a modest 29 miles per hour, where the official limit is 25, approaching Route 1, envisioning the many delights I would encounter 5 miles hence when I would arrive in the heart of our town. The light was green, so of course I knew that drivers on Route 1 would be sitting tight at a red light. Ha! That's how it might be in Michigan, or Mississippi, or Missouri, but not Massachusetts. I could not know it at the moment, but as I was innocently approaching the intersection, a hotshot at the wheel of a Honda was hurtling northward on Route 1. Heading to Rowley? To Newbury or points north? No. He intended to turn right onto Linebrook Road and head towards our dear Ipswich. The fact that he had a red light didn't seem to bother him. Right turn on red, baby. After stop? That's for sissies. The Honda came careening around the corner into the intersection, making a right turn on red. No stop, directly into my line of fire. I feel certain my Hyundai could have creamed him, and there's a part of me that wanted to give it a shot. But in a rare moment of sanity, I hit my brakes, noisily leaving a double stripe of black on the roadway, and the Honda escaped unscathed. Half a split second later, the Ford F-150 behind me also tried out its brakes. We had much squealing of tires and burning of rubber, but I am happy to report no contact was made and no lives were lost. There's always that moment after a near miss when your heart is thumping and your eyes are darting around as you try to get your bearings. That's when I saw in my rearview mirror that the driver of the truck behind me was shaking his head and smiling an angry smile and jabbing his pointer finger. He was hot about the Honda. Now we found ourselves, all three vehicles, Honda, Hyundai, F-150, in a caravan traveling eastbound. My crazy pulse settled into a seething surge. I began hoping that the Honda was headed to the same place as me, downtown, so I'd have the perfect opportunity to present a brief lecture on the concept of right turn on red after stop. Ah, nuts. The Honda turned left at the farm stand. I sighed, my moment of fury lost. But then, diabolical joy. In my rear view, as I drove on, I saw the pickup truck turn in behind the Honda. From there, it was just a matter of waiting for the next week's paper to scan the police log for farm stand fisticuffs. Two Danvers spots get one-day liquor license suspension. Danvers. Two local establishments will have their liquor licenses revoked for one day later this month after police found them in violation of selling alcohol to a minor for the second time in the last year. On Tuesday, the Select Board approved a one-day liquor license suspension of J&J Asian Cuisine and Cappy's Liquors, both located on Andover Street, to go into effect on Saturday, August 29th. The most recent violations occurred during routine alcohol compliance checks performed by the Danvers Police Department on July 27th. During this operation, an 18-year-old working with the department entered local businesses and attempted to purchase alcohol, Chief Jamie Lovell said at Tuesday's Select Board meeting. Four businesses in total failed to verify the teen's identification and sold or provided them with alcohol that day, including Torito Mexican Restaurant on Andover Street and the 466 Pub and Grill on Newbury Street, Lovell said. This Cappy's location and JJ both had already been found in violation of selling to minors in the last 12 months and received one-day suspensions of their liquor licenses as a result, a penalty that was held in abeyance on the condition they did not violate this law in the next year. An appeal period for that penalty has already passed, Select Board Member Gardner Trask III said. This is the first violation for the 466, Lovell said. Torito hasn't had any issues this year, but has been found in violation several times over the last 3 years, he added. Lovell's department typically conducts this type of routine operation twice a year and sent the teen out with two officers. The four businesses all cooperated with police without issue after they had provided alcohol to the undercover 18-year-old, he said. The select board voted to bring the businesses in for a discussion about the violations and possible penalties during the board's October 6th meeting. The motion to put into effect the penalty from J&J and Cappy's previous violations was made by Trask, who said he chose a Saturday for the one-day ban specifically as a measure of understanding of how important this is. I always bristle when people call it a sting operation. It's not, Trask said Tuesday. We're making sure that the people we entrust with the liquor licenses are complying and keeping the roadways and patrons and citizens of Danvers safe. Member Daniel Bennett said multiple violations at one business in 1 year is unusual for Danvers. There is very little historic context that anyone serving alcohol in our town has a violation twice in a year, Bennett said during the meeting. We have no precedent with this happening. And Danvers Rotary donates choking rescue devices to police. The Rotary Club of Danvers recently donated 10 LifeVac choking rescue devices to the Danvers Police Department. The club raised $1,000 to purchase the devices, which will be kept in the department's booking room and in each of Danvers' 9 frontline cruisers. The devices are portable, non-powered airway clearance devices intended to assist in the removal of foreign objects from the airway of a choking victim when standard first aid measures are unsuccessful, Police Chief Jamie Lovell said during Tuesday's Select Board meeting. His officers will be trained in how to use them. These devices will provide Danvers officers with another tool and response option when confronted with life-threatening choking emergencies, he said. They're intended to supplement rather than replace established first aid protocols, but we think it will be beneficial to the community. The money for the devices was largely raised through a bocce tournament held by the Rotary at Endicott Park late last month. And that's it for today's edition of the Salem News. I'm Ken, your volunteer reader here at the Talking Information Center, and I thank you for listening.